What do you call an alligator in a vest? An investigator. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 158. This is Starting Sustainability, and I am your host, Kaylin Chenoweth. Let's take this time to catch up with Kaylin. What has been going on in my world? Well, to be honest, work has been incredibly tough the last 2 weeks, very tough. My coworker, who I shared many duties with, was laid off, unfortunately, and that means that I got to absorb all of her duties and have been putting in 10 to 12 hour days every day for the last couple of weeks. It's been rough. I'm getting there. I'm figuring out how to do all the other things and how to make them more efficient and how to balance out all of my new duties to better fit within a hopefully 8 to 9 hour scheduled day. So I will get there. I will get through this. I will get there. But it has been very stressful to the point where I almost did not record this episode. I was like, I might just have to delay this a week. I will admit the original plan was a longer episode, but because of the very high workload the past 2 weeks, I'm going to split it into part one and part two. So this is officially part one of a two-part series. We will come back and do the deep in dive on part one in just a little bit. But first, we're going to finish catching up. I mentioned, it was either last episode or the episode before that, that I wanted to learn how to sing. I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to learn how to do this. I'm a doer. I don't know if you figured that out yet, but I'm a doer. It really honestly irks me when people say something like, yeah, we should go for a bike ride one day. And then never do it. Or we should all get together and have a dinner. And then I'll send out a text like, hey, group who all want a dinner, you know, are you available in March or April, May? Like, when's a good time? I'll put it together. And then suddenly nobody's available ever again. People who are dreamers who just say that they want to do things, but then never put in any work. I do not jive with them. Sorry. I'm sorry if you're one of those people. I really am. I'm sorry if you're one of those people because you're missing out on so many of life's great adventures and all the really fun stuff. I go for a hike and I look up and I see somebody rock climbing and I think, I want to do that. Then I go and I figure it out. I would listen to a lot of podcasts and I thought to myself, I really want to do my own podcast. And so I sat down and figured it out. And honestly, when it comes to these challenges, like learning how to do a handstand or learning how to sing, which I'm going to get more into, raising chickens and gardening, I'm very much jump in and figure it out. Because if you try to plan it all out, every single detail, so that there is no error and you don't make any mistakes, you'll never get started. And I observe that by friends and family all around me who have all these dreams, but they get so caught up in all the details of planning that they get defeated before they even start. I jump in knowing I'm going to make a mistake. And then when I do, I say, there it is. And now I've learned my lesson. And now I know for next year or the next time around how I'm going to do this or fix it or make it different and improve on it. Just jump in and start. I will say, my sister Tammy, who lives in North Carolina, so I don't see her very often, really, just when we have siblings week, like it's probably once a year at the most that I get to see her. But she did mention previously that my quality of wanting to do something and then setting out and doing it was something that she admired in me. She said, I've always admired that about you. You don't let anything stop you. You just go for it. Holy crap, that's the best compliment I have ever received. That, it makes me feel really good now. And she gave me this compliment like 2 years ago. And I still feel really good about it. I'm like, yeah, that's, I didn't realize that that was a trait that I had until she pointed out to me. And I'm like, I mean, doesn't everybody want to do stuff and then just do it? And the answer is no. So thanks for that, Tammy. Still makes me happy when I think of that. Anyways, for the last few weeks, probably a month or so, I've been wanting to learn how to sing. Singing can be a natural talent, but it can also be a learned talent because your vocal cords are muscles and you can exercise and train them just like any other part of your body. So if you want to be really good at kicking a soccer ball or throwing a baseball, you have to practice and practice, and you have to develop your muscles into the strength and to get that muscle memory so that it becomes more natural and easier for you and you get the dexterity. It's the same thing with your voice. In order to force myself to learn to sing, because signing up for voice lessons would be ideal, but it's gonna cost money, and then it's something else I have to schedule in, and that is hard. But I can sing in my car, and I am in my car every day, usually multiple times a day, and I figured this I could do. But in order to force myself to do it, I signed up to sing a song at church. And that would force me to do it. Just like if you want to run a 5K, then you have to sign up for it because now you've got a deadline and now you have to start training to make it for the 5K or whatever adventure race you might sign up for. I'm just using that as an example. At the church that I attend, it is usually hymnals because it's a smaller church and it's an older population. It's a lot of hymnals, but if you want to sign up to sing a song, you can, and you can, many people do this, and then they pick, I say many people, it's a small church, about the same four people do this over and over, and they pick more modern songs, and I do enjoy it quite a lot. And so I signed up and gave myself 1 month to get it figured out. Since then, I've been watching a whole lot of YouTube videos, and I learned what my vocal range is and then found a song that fits within that range so I'm not straining trying to hit the notes. And then I have been practicing and I learned about the proper way to warm up your voice. And I also learned the difference between your head voice and your chest voice. And I didn't know that you had two different voices, but apparently you do. So I have been practicing the head voice and the chest voice and really trying to develop the chest voice. If you did not know that there were two different voices, I'm going to do my best to explain it to you and to give an example. Now remember, I'm not a professional. I am learning to sing. I am figuring it out. But this is your head voice where it's really high up and the vocals are just within your upper throat. Somewhere over the rainbow, all up high, really soft and delicate. And then you have your chest voice where you put more oomph behind it. Somewhere over the rainbow. And the best example I can come up with is Christina Aguilera, who's like, hey! Hey, she goes to town on the microphone. That girl's got pipes. Now, I don't have what she's got. That's why I say I'm not a professional singer, but you can hear the difference. You have the really high, soft, whispery, delicate head voice, and then you've got down in your chest voice. Chest voice is what you talk with every day. So learning how to sing with that is different. I have sang in my life. I did choir in like fifth and sixth grade, and everything I did was head voice. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but that's how I've always sung, is with my head voice. Now that I know chest voice is a thing, I'm developing that and getting it figured out. Today is Thursday, February 29th, leap day. Happy leap day, everybody. I'm recording, so you're not going to hear this until Monday, but Sunday, in just a couple of days, that's the big day where I'm going to debut in front of the church of 15 people my vocal talents. So we shall see. Honestly, my biggest concern / fear is that we have had a lot of really wacky weather lately. We've had a lot of 50s and 60s. Then we even had a day where it was up in the 70s and then it dropped down to the 20s. We had tornado watches all over the place just a couple days ago. We actually ended up sleeping down in the basement. And whenever the weather is up, down, hot, cold, that's when my sinuses go crazy, and that's usually when I lose my voice. We will knock on some wood and say a little prayer and hope that I don't lose my voice until after I sing my song on Sunday. As I mentioned, we had some really violent, wild, crazy weather a couple days ago. And that brings me to my parent moment. Because of that, we were good. We were fine. But we prepared for it. We have a split level house, and down in the basement, which is a furnished basement, there is a utility room. Inside of that utility room is a little tiny closet that goes underneath of the stairs. And that is our little storm shelter area. It's not an official storm shelter. It's not like rebar and cinder blocks all the way around, but that's the safest place in our house. And it is a relatively good sized closet. Channing and I, during our lunch break, because all the storms were coming that night, so we cleared it all out because it had a bunch of tubs and storage and crap in there, so we had to pull it all out. And we didn't want to sleep in that storm shelter, but we did want to sleep in the basement. That way, if we did hear a tornado, the sirens went off, we get alerts on our phones whenever there's a tornado nearby. We would at least then have enough time to just grab the kids and go inside versus being upstairs, everybody's in separate bedrooms trying to collect all the kids and carry them. There's two of us and three kids, not enough arms. Everybody's tired. So we just went down to the basement and we wanted to make sure that we didn't scare the kids. We didn't want the boys to know that there was bad weather. I didn't want them to be scared of the storm. So we just told them that we are going to go camping in the basement and how fun it was going to be. And they were very excited to do that. So the boys got to sleep on the couch. We have a big sectional, and they got to sleep on there. They're thrilled to do that. I don't know. Kids are excited to break the norm, whatever the norm is. So if the norm is going to bed in your own bed every night, they are very excited to go anywhere else. And we set up a little pack and play for Hazley. And down in the basement, we do have the fourth bedroom of the house, which is our guest room, which is really a storage room that we shoved a bed in. There's lots of stuff everywhere down there, but there is a bed in there. Therefore, Chang and I washed and dried the sheets, got them ready, and we crashed in there on the bed. We were not going to be sleeping on the couch. That's for the kids. We were in the bed. Everybody was very close together. If anything happened, we could easily grab the kids and run inside. We were prepped. We were ready. All is good. The storm came and left. It was kind of cool. There was a YouTube channel. I don't remember it now, but there was a guy who was on there giving commentary of the storms as they were coming through. And then he had a team of storm chasers. I think there were 6 or 8 of them. And it was interesting to see their cameras mounted. It was the dash cams mounted on the cars and you could see them driving. And so we found the car that was in Indiana and it was coming down. It went through the Lafayette area and down through Indianapolis area and it was headed south trying to catch a tornado. It was interesting to see and watch. The worst of the storm was hitting at midnight. We stayed up till midnight and then we just had to go to sleep because we both get up at like 5:30 every day. Like, I can't do this anymore. I'm exhausted. Kids are asleep. The worst of it has come and gone. Nothing happened. So we're just going to go to sleep now so we can function at work tomorrow. And I have mentioned in the past that I'm trying to figure out and strengthen and learn more about a relationship with God. I was raised within a Christian church and went to church. Not super devout. I faltered away from it and I'm trying to find my way back into it. I mentioned previously the Bible Project, which has a whole lot of YouTube videos that you can watch. They also do have a podcast. Now, the YouTube videos are short and sweet, like maybe 10 minutes or less. And then the podcast is like an hour plus. It's quite a lot. But recently I discovered, recently as in the last 2 weeks, I discovered the Bible Recap app. You can read and learn about the Bible in 1 year. It's pretty neat. It gives you a short reading, about 3 to 5 minutes, and then a devotional, another 3 to 5 minutes, and then the podcast episode discussing what you just read. It's about 8 minutes or so. It would have been ideal to start it on January 1st as day one, and then you do it every single day throughout the year. But, you know, I just found out about it, and it is what it is. You can still do it. I just started it. You can still do it, too, if you want to. When you log in, it'll have day one, day two, and it will keep you on track. So it doesn't matter if you start February 29th or March 6th or whatever. It'll say, here's your day one, and it starts you at the beginning, and it prompts you every day. Here's day two, here's day three, which is really cool. It is recommended to carve out 20 minutes in the morning so you can do it before all the chaos of the day and so you can reflect on it throughout the day. Well, I tried that once. It took me about 2 hours to do it because I woke up, I got dressed, and then poured myself a bowl of cereal and read one passage, and then Colt woke up early. way too early, and he was a cranky mess all morning long. So then I started to do it again during lunch when Channing informed me of the terrible storms that were heading our way and how we had a lot to do to get prepared, so then my lunch got hijacked. In the end, it basically took me all day to get the devotional done, and I suddenly am realizing that if I get 2 days in a week with God, I will be happy with that. It's not going to be every single day like the program is designed, but it's a more realistic approach for me. So at this pace, it will take me about 2.5 to 3 years to read the Bible, which, you know what, the next 3 years are coming no matter what. So I can either give up or I'll just do it a little bit slower than what it's designed, but it's a start and I'm excited for it. Dun-a-ch-ch, dun-a-ch-ch, dun-a, 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 dun-a. What am I learning about? Well, it's in the title of the episode, but I wanted to have a fun introduction for this segment, the main topic of today. I honestly don't really know what it was about wintertime, but I was inundated with shark information throughout January and February, to the point where I was like, now that spring break is here, I guess now is a good time to tell you about it. That way you can really enjoy your beach vacation. That was sarcasm. I originally was introduced or tipped off this January to sharks by listening to a podcast called Criminal, and it was episode 90, and basically it talked about sharks and how when somebody is attacked by a shark, there's a lot of science that goes into learning about the shark attack. And I found it absolutely fascinating and thought, I really need to share this because this is super cool. It's, you know, stretched to be related to sustainability, but still really cool. So we're throwing it in the podcast because we're kind of breaking the rules and the ties at this point. We're just doing whatever I feel like doing. And this week, it's sharks. There is an international shark attack file. Did you know that existed? Because I didn't. Whenever there is a shark attack anywhere in the world, there is an investigation. Full on, just like a police investigation. After a shark attack, shark investigators... Did you catch that? See that joke at the beginning of the episode about the alligator in invest? An investigator? It's related because this is a shark investigator. That's a real thing. They will meet with the victim who received the shark bite, and they will measure the shark wounds, get a description of the attack, take notes of the temperature of the water that day, the weather, the time of the attack. Every single detail that they can get will go into the report. Before we get into more details, I want to share some really fun ear-catching facts. Get that? Because it's a podcast, so they're not eye-catching, they're ear-catching. Oh, Kaylin, you're so funny. Anyways, from 2000 to 2009, there were a total of 661 attacks around the world, which sounds like a lot, but that's over a 9-year span. In 2017, there were only 88 shark attacks, which was above the average at that point in time. And of those 88 shark attacks in 2017, 5 were fatal. Scientists have been tracking, and the average number of shark attacks keeps increasing year after year. Now, this could be attributed to more of us getting into the ocean, because water sports are becoming much more popular, and attacks often happen on holiday weekends when millions of people are swimming. It is hard to get an accurate number for shark attacks because sometimes they are reported as fish bites. Seriously? Even if newspapers report them as fish bites, because we don't want to scare away all of the tourists and their money that stimulates the local economy. Don't worry, the shark bite investigators know better. They will still reach out to victims. If they cannot be there in person, then they will send a letter to the victim asking for photos of the wounds and a list of questions like what clothes were they wearing, what colors were the clothes, what activity was being done in the water by them or by others nearby, just lots and lots of questions. The shark bite investigators have studied thousands of attacks, including serial killer sharks. That's a thing. If you're already paranoid about shark attacks, don't worry, there's serial killer sharks too. Great. This information compiles the shark attack file that I was telling you about. The shark attack file was launched after World War II when there were a lot of shark attacks on the U.S. naval officers. We will get into more details in part two, but basically here is a gist of the story. There was a naval warship that was sunk by Japanese torpedoes, and 900 men made it into the water alive and then waited 4 days for rescue. On the first night, sharks went after the corpses of sailors who had died, and then the next night, they went onto the living. They were attracted to the blood in the water, and then the sailors' movements trying to stay afloat. Survivors tried to get away from the blood, but they had nowhere to go. By some estimates, 150 men were killed by sharks. The Office of Naval Research felt they had to do something. They wanted to develop a shark repellent. Okay, you know, but to me, that's a silly idea. But first, before they could do this, they had to collect data. And that is how the shark attack file was started. It was created with the goal of documenting attacks on a global historical basis going all the way back to the 1500s. In 1988, it was renamed to the International Shark Attack File, and today they are based at the University of Florida. The shark attack investigators will look at the salinity of the water, which is like the saltiness of it, the temperature, the tides, the moon phase, what kind of bathing suit the victim was wearing, if they had tattoos, if they were wearing nail polish or toe rings, if they were menstruating, did they urinate in the water? All of these things could be an attraction for a shark. When it comes to sharks who habitually attack, like the serial killers, I guess these would be serial attackers, the numbers are very few, so that should put your mind at a little bit of an ease. Think of it like murders in the U.S. Most murders in the U.S. are one-offs. There is a very small percent that are due to serial killers. I feel like I'm supposed to find comfort in this statement, but I really don't. They all sound terrible. In the shark bite world, if there is a repeat offender, they're pretty rare, but they do get a lot of attention. Did you know the movie Jaws was believed to be loosely inspired by a series of attacks during the summer of 1916? Off the coast of New Jersey, 5 people were attacked. President Woodrow Wilson got involved and agreed to give federal aid to drive away all the ferocious man-eating sharks. Eventually, an 8-foot great white shark was captured and human remains were found in its stomach. And that's where Jaws stemmed from. When are most people attacked? That's a pretty important question to answer. I'm going to break down this complex equation for a shark attack. You need a human and you need a shark in the water at the same time. Good job. Yes, I'm hilarious. When do humans go into the water? During daylight. More specifically, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Then there are declines of shark attacks within specific time frames, like between 12 and 2 p.m. Why? It's not because sharks are less hungry during that time frame. It's because we humans are, and we leave the water to go get lunch. Most human attacks do happen during daylight hours, even though most species of sharks prefer to eat during dusk and dawn and during nighttime hours when they have a competitive advantage over their prey. Who wins in the war of sharks versus humans? It is estimated 100 million sharks are killed by commercial fishing every year. This means 11,000 die every hour. And what did I say it was for humans? There was 5 fatal attacks in the year of 2017. Looks like the humans are winning that war. Are you still scared of sharks? Well, let's look at some more fun facts. In 2023, just last year, 4.5 million people were bitten by dogs. There is an average of 250,000 humans who are bitten by other people each year. And these are the reported ones. I don't think that includes Hazley biting me when I try to get something out of her mouth, like dog food. So these are like real intense, actual serious bites that are getting reported. I'm giving you these dog bites and human bites in comparison to only 69 shark bites in 2023 worldwide, of which 10 were fatal. And I think it's the fatal part that has most people freaked out. So how do you reduce the risk of a shark attack? Number one, stay out of the water. That is the easiest way to prevent a shark attack. Florida has the most shark attacks in the world. New Smyrna Beach has been dubbed shark attack capital of the world. And it's a popular surf area, and the prime targets or victims are people with surfboards. There are hundreds of millions of people who go into the ocean each year, and billions of human hours spent in the water each year. And to think only six people, on average, don't come out because of a shark attack, you know, the odds are pretty infinitesimal. But you can still play it safe and just go to the community swimming pool instead. I think something else important to discuss is, what do you do if you see a shark acting aggressively? Well, you get out of the water. But if you're in a situation where you can't, like if you're scuba diving, then you go down to the bottom and you hide behind a structure until the shark forgets about you and swims off. If you are stuck in the water and the shark is approaching you and there's no place to go hide, then you need to be aggressive. You want to give a full body view to show how big you are. And if one is getting real up close to you, then the tip of their snout, their nose area, that is very sensitive, and that's where you're going to bop them. If you have an object, use that to bop them, because the nose is only a few centimeters above the mouth with hundreds of very sharp teeth, and your arm or hand could just slide right on in there very easily if you miss. Like I said earlier, part two is going to be coming out in the next episode, which will be March 18th, and we'll be discussing the U.S. Naval crisis or goof that ended up with a lot of men getting attacked by sharks. Before we go, I need to administer a challenge for you. I want you to become a paperitarian. That's a fun term that I've never heard of before. It was coined by the Paper and Packaging Board. I didn't even know that that existed either. But basically, it's someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle. It's about opting for paper-based packaging and then recycling that packaging properly. I'm sure most of you are already paperitarians, but now you have an official name, and I think it would be really cool if you could educate others about being a paperitarian. The next episode will be coming out on March 18th. Until then, continue saving the world, Sustainer Nation. I will talk to everybody on March 18th. Have a great one. Bye.